Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Business Munchies, where we munch on some business ideas. For everybody who's new, all we do on these series is that we discuss different business ideas and how we would build those business ideas. We try to take an optimistic point of view because every idea is a good idea in my opinion. So just want to start with a quick update about the no-code course. As everybody who's on our WhatsApp group knows that we started the no-code course on how you can automate your business, right? And so we got about 100 applications for the no-code course and we spoke to as many people as we could. Over the last 2 weeks, it's been difficult to talk to everybody, but we spoke to quite a few people and we have taken in 10 applications for the first cohort. If we did not speak to you, if we did not reach out to you, I am sorry. You might have gotten lost in the craziness that was there in the last 2 weeks. So the first cohort is going to be just 10 people. We're going to start in early August and it's going to be exciting. We're going to take them through a journey of how they can automate their business. And it's going to be a lot of learning for them as well as for us. Now, I'm going to talk about the first learning that has already happened for me. So the first week of the course is going to be about automating digital marketing, right? And that's something that I am building, because that's something that I have been doing for the past couple of years. And I decided to get the feedback of one of our cohort members. And I showed him everything that I had prepared so far about email automation and all that stuff. And then he looked at it and he was like, okay, this is great. But what about WhatsApp automation? And then my mind clicked. I was like, oh damn, I didn't put anything about WhatsApp automation. And then he sent me the link to a video by this guy called Sanjeev Jain. Okay. So this guy, he takes Google Sheets and he combines it with WhatsApp. And he can automate an entire marketing series of emails. So on one column, he'll have the WhatsApp message that's sending. And on other column, it'll be a column called day. It'll be on what day it'll send the message to that person, right? So let's say you add Siddharth Betala to this Google Sheets list. On day zero, it'll send the first message. Then on day five, it'll send the second message. On day 10, it'll send the other message. And all of this is completely automated because it's connected to WhatsApp through some kind of API. Okay, then I got curious what other kinds of WhatsApp automation exist, especially for marketing tools like this. Oh, by the way, Sanjeev Jain, he sells this on his website. I will link it in the show notes. And it's not cheap, but it's not too expensive either. So he has like a silver thing, which gives you 48,000 credits for 15,000 rupees plus GST. And he has an unlimited plan for 36,000 rupees. I guess that's unlimited credits. And I think the credit means the number of messages that you can send using this entire platform. Okay, so this exists. I started looking into how else you can automate Google Sheets with WhatsApp, right? And then this is what led me to the first idea for today's Munchies, a no-code platform for WhatsApp automation. I realized that there is no no-code platform that allows you to do this. I found three other ways of doing this. I found an application called Chat API, which gives you the API for your WhatsApp. But that costs $40 a month. And then you have to connect it with another application called Bubbly or something. And that costs you $10 a month. Okay, that's one way. I found another way. I found a blog by Twilio. Siddharth, what is Twilio?
Twilio basically provides you the infrastructure, technology infrastructure to allow your apps and websites to make calls, SMS integrations, all of that. So the backend infrastructure is provided by Twilio.
Okay. So I found a blog by Twilio and the blog by Twilio says how to send WhatsApp messages from Google Sheets with JavaScript and Node.js. I don't know what Node.js is. I don't know much about JavaScript, but I read the blog briefly and what I can tell is that it is a way to automate this, the exact same thing that this other guy was doing, Sanjeev Jain, but it'll require a little bit of coding, not too much. Then I found a HubSpot integration that costs $100 a month. It is crazy. I found a bunch of other articles that require you to use Python, right? So for somebody like me, somebody like Siddharth, we can't use these tools. And I realized that there is no cheap, affordable tool that is a no-code tool that allows you to do this. There's this guy, one guy called Sanjeev Jain, who is doing it. But it's not the cheapest. And secondly, if you go to his website, it's not the best website. But the tool is really fantastic. I will link to the YouTube video that I watched and to the website itself. But Siddharth, here's the idea. WhatsApp is going to be the biggest platform of the future. A lot of marketing is going to happen on WhatsApp. And currently, I'm not finding WhatsApp automation tools that are also no code. There are a couple, but they're pretty damn expensive. I think somebody in India can do it cheaper.
So I've actually worked on this. I was working, consulting with a company, and I was helping them send WhatsApp sort of messages for support and for lead warming and stuff like that. The challenge with WhatsApp right now, the costs are high because of the pricing that WhatsApp expects off of you. I think it ranges anywhere from like 5 cents to 19, 20 cents, depending on the country that you're sending the messages from and all of that.
So about 3 rupees per message.
Something along those lines, right? So that's one, obviously expensive. That's not something that any tool can control. So that'll depend on how the businesses use it. The other factor though is WhatsApp is very strict about spamming. So technically, once if you're sending a WhatsApp message to someone, there has to be some sort of consent that already has to be taken in place before you do that. So to give you an example, when you use ClearTrip or Make My Trip or 1MG, a bunch of other apps that are using, you know, one that are using WhatsApp to actually communicate with the consumers, they actually make you check a box that says, I allow you to send me WhatsApp messages. If that is not there in WhatsApp audit or whatnot, they might ask you for these details. If that's not there, they ban your accounts. So it's pretty strict when it comes to spamming. So I think that's a challenge that entrepreneurs will have to be mindful of. What that basically does is it limits your communication with potential, it limits your communication where you can't just reach out to potential buyers or leads. You can interact with your existing customers in some way or form. And I'm with you on the fact that a lot of, you know, business communication is actually going to happen on WhatsApp. And I'm very curious if they create a separate tab for it or how they change the user experience. But I already love the fact that my tickets or my, you know, 1MG lab reports or a bunch of things are directly on my WhatsApp. And I don't have to go to these apps and find emails and stuff like that. So from a user experience perspective, if done right, it's extremely powerful. But can you use it for lead marketing? Maybe, maybe not.
How many 1MG reports are you getting, Siddharth? I hope you're okay.
I am. I just got my full body checkup done for the entire family very recently and the antibody checks, hence the recency bias about 1MG.
I just want to take a slight detour here. I recently did a blood test to check my vitamin levels. I was extremely low on vitamin D. I got some pills and injection for vitamin D. My energy levels have shot through the roof. So if anybody is feeling super lethargic, check your vitamin D, check your B12. It might be low.
Yeah, I spoke to a doctor and he said, I think vitamin D and B12, like low levels of vitamin D and B12 are the fourth most common like problem in India. So I had the same experience, exact same experience as you. I think my levels were like way below 20 for vitamin D, which is what like the base minimum it needs to be. And after taking the medicine for like a few months, it's now back up to 40 or whatnot. And it makes a huge difference to your energy levels.
Yeah. Okay. But going back to WhatsApp, I'm very happy that WhatsApp is super strict about spamming. And it makes sense that it's so expensive because, I mean, Facebook built an amazing tool. I hate saying that, but it's true. At the same time, the kind of tools that, you know, 1MG uses, the kind of tools that FarmEasy and all these Make My Trip use, I don't think they're affordable right now to the SME segment.
It's not.
And also that chat API that I was talking about, $40 a month, is not really that affordable for the SME segment either. $40 a month, $500 a year, it's quite a bit of money.
So the thing is, Sahil, you'll also have to understand that most of these companies, why they rely, the companies that are using WhatsApp today are primarily B2C companies. And it's very, in general, it's very hard to do B2C as an SME anyway, because you need a lot of dry powder.
But where I was going with that was that, you know, stuff like that, like order tracking. I think order tracking is something that can be automated even for B2B businesses using WhatsApp, because a lot of business happens on WhatsApp and a lot of this is happening, you know, manually. But, you know, something like this, the Google Sheet that we were talking about earlier, you can connect your Google Sheet, which is doing the order tracking, directly with WhatsApp. And so if something is updated, it sends a message to the customer that, hey, your parcel is about to arrive or something like that. And I think these kind of no-code tools could be super useful.
I 100% agree. By the way, just one interesting fact about WhatsApp messaging. If a customer initiates a conversation, your messages are not charged, right? So that's the interesting piece where you could probably have some sort of an automation bot or something which says that, hey, you know, make sure your consumers are, or whoever your customer is, has saved your number. And whenever they have a query, they can actually initiate a conversation on WhatsApp, which is not going to be charged to you at that point in time. You can reply as many times for the next 24 hours and that's not going to be charged to you. What we did at this company that I was consulting with, I think, was we started sending these, you know, marketing messages to people who initiate chats for support so that it's free on our end. And I think that's a hack that people will end up using in some way or form, because somebody has initiated a conversation and now you can send them more stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm on my company website, we have a WhatsApp WhatsApp chat button as well. So I'm going to start using probably these WhatsApp integrations to send to those people as well.
Yeah.
I think it could be something super powerful. I'm really excited to go deeper into this subject. But I also think there is a place for somebody to build a WhatsApp automation tool for that's cheaper than $40 a month. And that's easier to understand so that you don't need to use any coding to actually build it out. Okay, anyway, moving on. I think what's the next idea, Siddharth?
Okay, so I was speaking to a couple of people a few days ago around franchising and how big that market is and what happens in the franchising market, right? I'll give you some numbers, obviously. I like to start with numbers. The Indian franchising market is about $50 billion, so a huge market. It's grown 4 to 5x since 2013-14, primarily led with like a lot of IT professionals that left their jobs and actually found franchising as a gateway to entrepreneurship. So a lot of these people ended up starting different kinds of franchisees. Now, there are about 5,000 active franchisers in India. 50% are regional brands, 34% are national brands, 16% are global brands. There are about 2 lakh outlets, 1.7 lakh franchisers, people who have sort of taken these franchisees. Education, F&B, clothing are the big sort of categories. So this was just an understanding. This was just to give you an understanding of how big the franchising market is. But the problem in the franchising market is still there is a lot of information sort of there's a lack of transparency in how this entire industry operates. When somebody who wants to take a particular franchisee talks to a particular brand, they don't know enough about, you know, the experiences that previous franchisers might have had. In India, there are a bunch of companies that have scammed people by giving away franchising, taking master franchising fees and whatnot, and then not delivering on the product quality or the value or shutting shop in a couple of years and stuff like that. And a lot of people get scammed because of it. I was thinking of a marketplace of sorts. And I know there is already an existing marketplace. I think there are one or two. But if you look at their reviews, if you look at their employee reviews, if you look at their company reviews, they're terrible, which makes me believe there's a better way to do it. And all I was thinking was there's this company called microacquire.com, which we've spoken about on the podcast for a while. Actually, the acquisition that we are actually completing right now is through microacquire.com. Their UI is slick. The level of information there, the level of details that you can get about a particular company is slick. Something similar for franchisees, right? And maybe because there already exists a competitor that is doing mass market play, maybe you just focus on high-end franchisees. Maybe you just focus on international brands to start with. Figure out a niche in this segment. Start a marketplace that connects people who want to give out franchisees to people who want to take these franchisees. Build a level of trust with information so that people sign up knowing what they're signing up for in terms of margins, investments, SOPs, standard operating procedures, hiring, a lot of technical knowledge that needs to be given out. Are these companies giving this information out or not? Rating them along these criterias and making a marketplace that allows for new franchisees to be taken, right? And once you figure out one niche segment, this industry is way too huge to worry about like the next business opportunity within it, right? Obviously, you can expand beyond segments, but a huge market in the US is actually franchising loans. So somebody who wants to take a Subway franchisee or a Domino's franchisee, there's a complete industry where people who evaluate these franchisees and give out loans to these people to start these things, right? That itself is non-existent of sorts in India. You could potentially get into that once you build this marketplace. I think there are a bunch of other opportunities. I think franchising events, there's a company, the largest company in India, and I'm not going to take the name because I'm dissing them. They have like three or four sort of verticals within the company. One of them is events, which used to happen before COVID in Delhi, Bombay, large events where you can go and see who are the companies that are giving out franchises. They also have like a consulting company where they help companies set up their entire franchising. And then there's a marketplace also that they run. The name of the company is very simple. It's the word franchisee with the country that we live in. It's just that. But I've personally heard not so great reviews about these people. I've heard the way they sort of operate is not great. It's not very customer centric. They tend to sort of force you into paying subscription fees and whatnot and not deliver value. That's my first hand experience from what I, you know, spoke to some people about and also read online, which is why I think there's space to actually disrupt it in some way or form. What do you think?
For your sake, Siddharth, I'm really happy that Rasika is not here again, because she would have destroyed your franchisee idea, just like how she destroyed your distributor's idea.
This, by the way, that still, like, I think there's an opportunity there.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, listen to our episode with Soulful Foods, Rasika. Fantastic episode, by the way. But at the end, we have like a munchy session with her in the last 10 minutes. But okay, franchisees, the way I look at it is, for a lot of people, the gateway to entrepreneurship. Because the one of the biggest hurdles for entrepreneurship is like, what is the idea? How am I going to set it up? What are the operations? How am I going to set up all the operations? What about the branding? What about the marketing and all of that stuff, right? Now with franchises, you don't have to worry about any of that. The branding is done. The idea is done. Everything is done. All you have to do is make sure that you put up the capital. So you're putting up that capital. You're taking the risk and you're doing the day-to-day operations. But everything else is done. And so for a lot of people, that's their first route to entrepreneurship. Now, the problem that you mentioned about all of these people getting scammed is that if this is their first route to entrepreneurship, and this is their route to long-term wealth, right? And they're getting scammed. Oh my God, I feel so bad for them. Because they're thinking that this is the way that they're going to make long-term wealth for their children, for whoever. And then they get scammed. The idea that I love the best that you mentioned was the franchisee loan thing. Because, for example, if it is a franchise for an established company like a Subway, like a Domino's or something like that, and there are not too many people in that area, it's a pretty risk-free loan from a bank perspective, from all I can see. I don't think a bank would give this loan, but I think you could build an NBFC around this idea. In the US, I know that franchises are a way to build a lot of wealth. There are a lot of franchise owners in the US who own multiple franchises of like a Subway or a McDonald's or something like that, or all in a small town, they own franchises of different restaurants. And that way also, you know, they're known for that. I'll give an example of this. My sister used to live in France as an exchange student when she was very young, when she was like 15, 16, through Rotary International. And one of her host parents in France used to own a McDonald's franchise. And that was the only McDonald's in that village that she lived in. And they were a very wealthy family because of that. And that's their entire business. It's just owning that McDonald's franchise. So yeah, I like the idea of franchises. I think the franchise loan is a good idea. Franchise marketplace. So what is the exact problem with the current one that exists that you think that another one could do better? You're saying that there's not enough information on the current marketplace?
I won't say that. I think they do provide a decent level of information. My problem with that is it's very sort of focused on, it's geared towards the people who want to give out the franchisees, right? And that makes sense because these are the people who are going to technically pay them a lot of money to list and stuff like that. The problem with that is there's a lot of incorrect information that gets put out to attract applications, to attract customers. I want to build some sort of a platform which is slightly more neutral in terms of like critically looking at the people who are giving out franchisees and also getting the right kind of investors and do the matchmaking, which is why I want to do it niche, which is why maybe just do it for international brands or maybe do it for luxury brands, something which is small that you can deal with and you don't have to compete with the bigger players. The other interesting part about this whole thing, by the way, is most of these searches get generated on the internet, right? Like it's a Google search when somebody wants to start a franchisee. So you don't really have to market it extremely aggressively. You just have to focus on a lot of content, educational content, SEO and stuff like that, that can be built over a period of time.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of our Naturals episode. After that Naturals episode, the number of people we got messaging us, asking us, hey, can you get us a Naturals franchise? I was just like, dude, I have no control over this. I cannot control when Naturals is going to give you a franchise or not.
Funny that you mentioned this. Just yesterday, I met somebody who lives in Surat and he was just confused why there's no Naturals ice cream in Surat. He was just like, why is there no franchisee in Surat for Naturals ice cream? And I was confused also, why is there no franchisee there?
Oh yeah, I know the answer to this question. It's because of the supply chains. Because they like to have a lot of control over the quality of their product and they like to have their own manufacturing base over there. So even in South India, I think now they've recently started expanding into South India and they built a factory over there.
Dude, Bombay and Surat are just like, you cannot get better connectivity.
Oh, that's true, actually. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Exactly.
I assume it has something to do with that, but maybe there's something deeper about what they're thinking about. I don't know. But going back to your marketplace, so when it comes to marketplaces, marketplaces are very difficult to build because you have to build supply side demand and you have to build demand side demand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you have to build demand and supply, both.
Yeah, exactly. And therefore, when you start off, you have to start in a niche, right? So what is the biggest niche for franchises in India is a question to you.
International markets, like, would you... international brands. I think they're not getting the experience that they would like. Both, so international brands coming in obviously will go to HNIs or like people who have some sort of wealth and who understand the franchisee business. I doubt it's going to go to, you know, people who are entering the entrepreneurship market through franchises. I don't think that's going to happen. So target the international brands, luxury segment maybe.
If these international brands will only give the franchisee to an established player, then those established players will already have businesses that have multiple franchises, right? So they would not need your marketplace, I think, because they would have better connections than that.
I mean, it's still very difficult to get a new franchisee, right? Like if it's the same franchisee that they want to expand, sure. But if they still want to get in touch with a newer brand, that's not that straightforward.
No, I just think building the demand from both the sides, I think that's going to be the hardest.
So this is going back to the episode with Ankit Dudhwewala, who started Software Suggest, right? It was a marketplace, similar challenge on. So if you haven't heard that episode, that's on our Gaana podcast. You should listen to it. We link it in the show notes. But what he does is he built softwaresuggest.com. So any business who wants to use a particular software can come onto that platform and actually see the different kinds of software that are available for his use case and end up getting in touch with the software company. Now, when he initially started, what he did was just focused on getting the demand side. So people who wanted to get a particular software, and he built a database of those people and started sending it to different software companies. So you do the exact same thing here. Figure out the, you know, HNIs or UHNIs who are in the franchising market who have multiple franchisees. Try and get their data and see if they're interested in taking new franchisees. Take that data and start targeting people who are trying to enter India, or maybe even national brands, you know, national big brands that are trying to expand, and say that, hey, here are the people that want a particular franchisees in these regions, and I can give you more if you help me with more information about what are you trying to look for and stuff like that.
Fair enough. Should we discuss this more or are we done?
No, I just think it's a big enough industry that's going to perennially keep sort of growing. I don't think this goes away at any point in time. Franchising has been an age-old concept that's going to continue to exist, probably done in a more tech-efficient and more sort of financial help in loans and stuff like that that will come into the picture eventually. So I do think there are a bunch of opportunities within this space.
The only question I want to leave for the listeners or for you, Siddharth, is... which is that one niche of franchises that could probably need this kind of marketplace? I think food is kind of overdone.
Yeah.
Because food is the most popular one. Retail, but question is what kind of retail? Retail is also dying. So I don't know. The question is what niche will you choose and what niche will you start out from? I think that will determine the whether this idea lives or dies.
I agree.
Okay. Moving on to something that I started talking about last time in the last Munchies episode, but I didn't go fully into the idea. Okay. Unbundling digital. I can't say the word digital properly. Anyway, unbundling digital marketing. And this is something I spoke about last time. I'm going to go deeper now. In my opinion, when digital marketing started, it started as everything in one place, right? Like you will have your performance marketing, you'll have your SEO, you will have every single thing in one place. And now, 10 years later, 15 years later, after that entire big wave of digital marketing agencies started, now we're at this place where all of these functions themselves have become really, really deep areas. So for example, if you take performance marketing, when performance marketing just started, when Google Ads and all of that stuff just started, it was nascent. There was not many people who understood it. And so you had generalist companies who would do that generally. Maybe your SEO person who's handling your Google will also handle your performance marketing. But now performance marketing has become such an essential role, especially for D2C companies, that I recently found a business. Their only job is growth marketing for e-commerce businesses, right? And I think this is what has started happening, is that earlier everybody was generalist. Now people have started focusing on different industries. So this one company I found, I think it's called GrowVista, GrowVisto, something like that. They are focused on marketing for e-commerce businesses. We also spoke to Jatin Modi on a previous episode. This was quite a while back. He has a B2B marketing agency, digital marketing agency. So it has started dividing as per industry. But what I think needs to happen is also divide as per function. So taking away SEO and then within SEO, going deeper into the different parts of SEO. So you have your backlinking. So you can have an agency that is focused on making sure that you get very high quality backlinking, right? You can have an agency that's focused only on content marketing right now. And then you have an agency that is focused only on technical SEO. So technical SEO means all the technical website stuff that needs to be fixed. So what's happening right now is these SEO agencies are doing technical SEO and they're also saying, ha, we'll also do your content writing. But their content writing is absolute crap. Like my five-year-old nephew could write better than them. Okay. And then their backlinking is just absolute trash again because they're backlinking from them really random websites. So you specialize these different functions, and for high quality customers, like a really big website, like, you know, like a D2C company, like an Epigamia or something that wants to really do well on the SEO, they can get like, okay, this guy's good at backlinking. I'm going to get him for my backlinking. Okay, I'm going to get this person for my content writing, my content marketing and all that stuff. So that way, I think that you can divide your digital marketing into these different, very specialized fields. And I think there's enough of a market now for that to happen. Before, there was not enough of a market, but now there is.
Yeah.
Siddharth.
I more or less agree with this. I think there are some challenges in what you're suggesting. But before I go there, I think one of the things that I've noticed in the business world is it's generally a cycle of bundling and unbundling and bundling that keeps going on. And new business models are formed, right? To give you an example, Craigslist is a company in the US, which is like a listings marketplace, which was different newspaper classifieds being brought together, bundled together into one place. And now there are multi-million dollar websites that have focused on just one niche within Craigslist, unbundled it and built a business around it, right? So this cycle of unbundling and bundling keeps going on.
Airbnb is the biggest example of that.
Yeah. So I do think, you know, going along these lines makes sense. The challenge that I'm facing here, and this comes from my experience in the software world, right? There are two ways to implement a technology solution in your company. One is to go, you know, choose one software solution that does all the things that you want, like a one big CRM with ERP and combined sort of thing, right? Take an SAP and that does all the things possible. Or take best of breed solutions and stitch them together. The problem with best of breed solutions, while they obviously individually do great, is how do you stitch them together and make them work together? And that's extremely challenging, right? The same thing with when you're talking about an agency for a company, the reason they like to deal with one agency is because from an operational overhead perspective, you're dealing with one agency that takes care of all your marketing requirements or most of your marketing requirements, digital marketing requirements. Obviously, the problem, especially in an agency business, which is basically the talent is the real asset in this company. It's not possible to aggregate that kind of talent for all different functions in one place, right? Generally, how digital marketing agencies have grown is they get really good at one niche. They say they start off with, let's say, performance marketing. they get an in inside the company and get some market share or some wallet share of that company from a digital marketing agency perspective, and then slowly start adding newer services and getting increasing market wallet share from that particular company. But as I said, the challenge is not the same level of quality on the other other marketing functions. I do think this is a new way that companies will have to look at, where they build some sort of a marketing function in-house that is working with different agencies. So maybe a 3-4 people team in-house that's working with different set of agencies instead of working with one agency. And just to list out the kind of niches that you can, the kind of sort of unbundling that you can do. There's performance marketing. Within that, there's new age performance marketing to target new platforms versus the Facebook and the Google's TikTok is being the new platform. There's obviously content marketing, which within itself is a huge industry. Influencer marketing is another one.
So within content marketing, there's video, there is blogs, there is images, there is these infographics.
Influencer marketing, referral marketing, and something new that's coming up is moment marketing, which is capturing like a hot trend or a breaking news or some meme that's caught on fire and actually creating marketing material around it, right? It's called moment marketing. Very recently discovered that's a thing, and there are agencies that are doing it now. So I do think it's possible to unbundle it, but this will require a different way of thinking from a company perspective and different way how they set up their org in order to make this happen. What will also happen, by the way, Sahil, is I think this will result in smaller companies, freelancers working on content, SEO. So it goes back to the whole, gig economy of sorts. It'll be interesting how this can be played out, and maybe even a platform that allows you to find like specific, and this is a broader idea that we need to speak about later, but maybe a platform that focuses on SEO freelancers or content marketing freelancers, right? Pepper Content is technically trying to do that. Just the whole unbundling of Upwork, I think is an interesting idea that we should go deeper into.
So, I mean, just to give another example and also to advertise my wife, she, for example, focuses only on making websites for D2C companies. Because that's where she finds her passion. But I completely agree with you that the way that companies look at digital marketing will have to change if they want to go down this road. For example, I don't think these specialized roles, these specialized agencies will work for small companies. I think small companies will continue to need to use a generalist digital marketing agency. But this is more for bigger companies. For example, maybe a Unilever will probably do everything in-house. I don't know. For example, if they want to, get much better at SEO.
Sugar Cosmetics, I think, is a perfect example, right? Like a startup that's grown big. It's now a 100 crore club or something like that. Mama Sugar Cosmetics. These people can actually look at specialized functions.
Exactly. Because like, for example, if they want to get really good at SEO and they want to get really good at backlinking, they can for a year, they can hire this one agency that is just bloody amazing at backlinking. And then they solve all of their issues. Because then they wouldn't want to take that in-house. Because once it's done, they can keep adding onto it with a mediocre generalist agency.
Yeah.
So I think this is more, your customers will be more these bigger companies, and they won't be the smaller companies. And also, I think what will happen is, as you mentioned, you will make a name for yourself for that specific niche. What happens when you're a generalist is you don't make a name for yourself for anything. Right. But when you get really specialized into something, you start making a name for yourself. For example, the next time Mama Earth needs to get a really good backlinking person, and they talk to the founder of Sugar Cosmetics, they're like, oh, who did you do for your amazing backlinking for your website? They can be like, oh, I spoke to that guy. That guy is really good at backlinking. Right. So then you'll get good at that. You'll get known for that. And I agree with you. The operations will have to change of how currently companies work with agencies. I really do think that budget of, let's say, like $100,000, instead of all of it going to one agency, a generalist agency, it needs to be spread out between multiple smaller agencies who can do it better for that specific thing. But for that, you need a strong, strong, strong head of digital marketing who understands every single function. They don't need to be good at it. They need to understand it.
100%. Completely, completely agreed with that.
And also that unbundling of Upwork. You stole that from somebody's tweet.
Yes, I did. That was Gaurav Sharma. Just call. We've hosted him also. It feels like this episode, we've just plugged in a lot of our previous episodes. I can assure you that was not by plan. That just happened. But yeah, I think his tweet actually, you know, make me go down the rabbit hole of what's happening with the unbundling on Upwork. The reason I don't want to discuss it today is we don't really have enough, you know, research done yet. So maybe next week.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that next week, unbundling of Upwork. I think that's a very interesting idea. But also what you just said about we plugged in a lot of previous podcasts on this episode is because we've almost reached 100 episodes on the main TID account. And on the Garner account, I think we have what, like 8 or 9 episodes. So we have definitely crossed 100 episodes totally. And we are about to cross 100 episodes on this account. If anybody has an idea of a 100th episode special that we should do, let us know. I was thinking we can do an AMA that can ask me anything. So maybe we'll put a message on our WhatsApp group. Hey, we're about to do our 100th episode. Do you have any questions for us? And or do you have any business ideas that you want to, us to discuss on the episode? And maybe we'll do that for the 100th episode.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we should do something interesting for the 100th episode. I got an idea from somebody from the team or somebody who is trying to help us out. She said, why not create a timeline of sorts of all the entrepreneurs that you've gotten on so far? Like just a long ass timeline with like pictures of all the entrepreneurs and what they do. I just don't know how to do it. I don't have graphic designing skills. And Sahil's wife is extremely, her hourly rate is extremely expensive for us to afford her. So we'll have to figure out how we do it.
But she made our logo for free.
Yeah.
So I think we owe her some money.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, okay. Sahil, how many episodes are we away from 100? I think 5 or 6?
I think 4 or 5.
We are at 57 ratings on Apple. Can you think of any hack or any way we can get that to 100 ratings on Apple? Because I know we have enough listeners to actually give us those ratings. We have significantly more number of listeners, but I don't know how to make them convert into ratings. And honest ratings, I'm not even saying 5-star ratings. Just give us a rating so that we know what you feel. But we are at 57 rating at 4.8 star. I would love to see it get to 100 in the next 4 or 5 weeks. Possible? Not possible?
Let's see. I think we need to get more richer people who use iPhones. So that's what we need to target. Send out a bulk WhatsApp SMS to everybody who owns an iPhone in Bombay. Because you know, nobody in Indore owns an iPhone.
Maybe we can automate it through the WhatsApp no-code solution that you're thinking of.
Exactly. So somebody please build it for us. And in the next week, we'll make sure that we're able to send all these WhatsApp messages to all these people to get us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So subscribe to us on Spotify if you haven't already, or Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening. And yeah, thanks a lot. I think this was a great episode. I enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to discuss unbundling Upwork. That's going to be interesting.